Welcome to Stepping Out of Babylon, produced by Sue Supriano. Babylon is everywhere. It's the isms and schisms both in the system and within ourselves. Let's unify, stand aligned, and step out of Babylon. Hi, everybody. My name's Sue Supriano, and I'm really excited to be speaking today with Mike Rupert. Mike Rupert is the editor and publisher of From the Wilderness. He was a cop, basically, with the LA Police Force some years ago. And you're an investigator, and you've been coming up with really, really important information. So I'm so excited today to be able to interview you. Maybe for the fourth time here, third time.
Yeah.
Welcome.
Devin, I have not been a policeman for 25 years, and I've been publishing my newsletter now for over 5.5 years, and we're now over 10,000 subscribers. But it was the CIA. I came from a CIA family. I was being recruited into CIA operations, and I would not get involved in dealing drugs or protecting drug shipments. I tried to speak out about that 25 years ago. That ended my career. But I investigate more than CIA. I'm not just strictly focused on the Central Intelligence Agency. I do economics, politics, and basically how things really work way down deep and what really drives world events. And we've been very successful in predicting developments since 9/11 and even before 9/11, but that's because we have a map that describes how things work.
Yeah, I was just trying to find a way to say that because you know so much about so many things. And I was just reading about the stealing of money, of the frauds of the corporations and the government and the billions of missing dollars, which you've talked about before, Mike Rupert, but you might want to say a few words about it again because most people don't know this, or maybe it's breaking open. You would know that better than I, as you move around and keep much closer track of things than I do.
Well, some of it is starting to break open, Sue. What you were reading was a chapter from my forthcoming book, Crossing the Rubicon, America's Descent into Fascism at the End of the Age of Oil, which should be out in the fall or winter of 2003. But the chapter you were reading, it talks specifically about, among other things, the looting or stealing of $3.3 trillion, that's with a T, from the U.S. Department of Defense. These are funds that the Pentagon has said, gee, we just don't know where they went. Now, that has been a growing topic of concern in a government, regardless of which political party occupies the White House, that is increasingly run as a franchise operation for major corporations. Two companies, Lockheed Martin and DynCorp, do all the financial data processing for the Pentagon, Housing and Urban Development, Health and Human Services, many U.S. government agencies. And that money is just gone. Now, that was one of the major topics recently in a full-page ad, which my newsletter from the Wilderness ran in the Washington Post as a result of a donation from a benefactor in Washington, D.C. That ad talked about the missing $3.3 trillion at a time when then Army Secretary Tom White had stated that he couldn't balance the Army's books because of the attacks of 9/11. Now, what's interesting about Tom White is that he was an executive with Enron who had made hundreds of millions of dollars insider trading Enron stock, and all of a sudden now he says he can't balance the Army's books. It's interesting to note that it was the Navy wing of the Pentagon that was hit on 9/11. The Army wasn't damaged at all. So he resigned just 2 days after the ad was received by the Washington Post. The ad didn't run for about 3 weeks afterwards. That's a whole separate story about getting the ad run, but we had to rewrite it because apparently the ad was leaked. That ad was so successful, it prompted such a positive response from around the world and around the country that we did some checking and found out that we could run the same ad in the 12 largest media markets in the country for about $100,000. And it took us less than 3 weeks to raise $120,000. And we have just, as of the first part of July, placed the orders to run the same full-page ad in the Atlanta Journal-Constitution, the Boston Globe, the Arizona Republic, and the Miami Herald. And we're going to hit 8 more papers.
Mm-hmm. That's great. That's just a brilliant thing to do because it's so hard to get out information. I mean, we can put it out in the independent, non-corporate media, but we're so small compared to, we don't really reach as many people as we'd like to. Can you say more about the response to the Washington Post? I mean, that's pretty major. The guy resigned.
We had 35,000 website visitors the day that the ad ran and the day after. That's in one day. And there were very strong responses, mostly from people who read the ad and were kind of tearfully saying, oh, my God, we never thought we'd see this kind of truth anywhere in a major publication.
So it rang true. They were just
absolutely
not expecting to see it.
Absolutely. And but also there was like this major dead silence out of Washington. Now, I have writers who I hire from time to time in Washington who were very well placed, and they were checking around, and people were just going, the phones were ringing off the hook inside government. Did you see this ad? Go to the Post today, page A16. Look at this ad. And we think we're really going to take them by surprise now as we start hitting around the country on dates that we're not going to disclose until we hit. We're really going to do this as a run-up to the 2004 election to put people on notice that we're holding them accountable. And that's especially the Democratic Party challengers, because they aren't talking about issues that need to be talked about.
Mm-hmm. No, they sure aren't. I have to let the audience know that though I've been an activist and politically involved in social change for very many years, I've learned so much from you, Mike. I may not remember it. Just a word in defense of my own lack of memory. But it's been since 9/11, which is when I first heard you speak in San Francisco. It was in January, I think, 2002. I was just totally riveted by your videotape, Truth and Lies of 9/11. And I'm a person that can't sit still, and I could not move. I was just riveted to just learning so much. And I've had so many layers of the onion peeled away from me since 9/11, and there are just so many layers. It's this corruption stuff is so deep, and of course people feel really overwhelmed and hopeless about that even when they get it, and a lot of people don't get it, I guess.
Well, sometimes you want people to feel hopeless, because it's not until they get hopeless that they finally decide to do something and get off their butts. We're seeing now, and I just published a huge story at our news site, at our website, fromthewilderness.com, which is called Beyond Bush, Part 1. It's a two-part series, and it's a free story, really showing and stating very clearly that Bush is going to be impeached. The moves are being made in the power circles because he's bad for business. He's botched things up. We have Vietnam-like conflicts in Afghanistan and Iraq both. Continual attacks on U.S. troops, no end in sight. We're spread thin militarily. The administration has irritated most of the world. And there are very strong signs that financial powers that I really say are above the White House have made the decision that Bush has to go. Now, Bush doesn't want to go, but neither did Richard Nixon. And I drew this parallel about 3-4 months ago, actually probably back in February, when it was first disclosed that the administration had relied on forged documents to allege that Saddam Hussein was buying uranium from Niger. And the way this story broke and how it broke was exactly the way that the Watergate stories broke around Richard Nixon. The administration is clearly guilty. The administration is clearly guilty now of having deceived the American people on the war in Iraq. But even more so, I think that when we have people like Senator Jay Rockefeller, who's the ranking member of the Senate Intelligence Committee, calling for an FBI investigation of these documents, and you have major media mouthpieces that are known to be CIA-affiliated, like Walter Pincus of the Washington Post, who played a very big role in the Gary Webb cocaine stories in 1996. Walter Pincus wrote a story in 1967 called How I Traveled the World on a CIA Stipend. When Walter Pincus starts breaking front-page stories in the Washington Post clearly tie the Bush administration to criminal activity, there's a very strong sign the gig's up. Same with Jim Risen at the New York Times. This pattern is very well documented now, but it's also clear that there is an intelligence and military mutiny against the Bush administration. The CIA is distancing itself from George Bush. So he may win the election, but he will be impeached shortly thereafter if he does.
And he just got a whole bunch of money. I think he's on a fundraising tour, right?
That's exactly the way Richard Nixon played it in 1972. Richard Nixon's personality was, I'm unbeatable. I can raise more money than anybody, and they can't take me out. Of course, he won the 1972 election by a huge landslide, but he was impeached a year and a half later and removed from office, actually. He wasn't impeached, but that was pending. And he resigned to avoid the impeachment and removal. And that's clearly what's happening here. This is a game of poker. Bush thinks that he's so powerful he can't be removed. And there's no question that he will probably raise more money than all the Democratic challengers combined, except for John Kerry, who's filthy rich in his own right. But Bush may win the election. That is not at all certain to me now.
You don't think they're going to rig everything at this time, Florida?
That's one of the big questions that I think progressives and activists need to be aware of before they naively run into election 2004. Election 2000 was stolen, and in election 2002, the midterms, we had new proprietary software intended to solve these problems of hanging chads, which turned out to be proprietary, which the court has ruled now. Cannot be examined by the public, and in many cases, ChoicePoint and other software programs are owned by people with strong Republican interests. Chuck Hagel of Nebraska, the senator, has part interest in the software company that counted the Nebraska votes, and he won by an 83% landslide. But nobody can challenge that. So, you know, everybody's got to have their eyes open. But the idea is what we drag out into the public light during the election campaign.
Well, I guess you're one of the people in charge of dragging things out, getting the information for all of us to drag it out, because I'm one of these people that feels like, well, it doesn't really make a huge amount of difference. It might make a hair bit of difference if the Democrats or the Republicans are in power, but they're basically two wings of the same bird here. So there's that. And Bush is, you know, who knows how deep he is into, he's deep into stuff, but he's also probably a front man, you know, can be replaced by somebody else like him.
That's the point. The point is that there is a board of directors that hires the CEO. Now, the board of directors encourages these horse races and contests to find out who the best candidates are and who's the best winner and so on and so forth. Nonetheless, they can remove presidents and they can create presidents. Looking at the field of Democratic challengers, in part two of our story series, Beyond Bush, we are going to question all the Democratic challengers about their positions on four or five very key issues, one of which is peak oil, the fact that the world is running out of energy. We've passed the peak of production, and from now on there will be less supply of oil as opposed to increasing demand. And this is going to be one of the biggest events in human history. We're going to have a natural gas crisis in this country this winter. We've been writing about that at From the Wilderness. People are going to freeze. We're going to ask them about missing money from the Pentagon, $3.3 trillion. We're going to ask them about 9/11 and the fact that there's clear evidence of government complicity and a major cover-up in those attacks. Iraq will bring that back to the table, by the way. As the Iraq case is investigated more, than 9/11 will be challenged more also. So that's far from dead. So we're going to hold we're going to take five issues and hold the Democratic challengers accountable. Civil liberties is one, and here I'll say that the only candidate, my position is no Democratic candidate will get my support who doesn't call for the repeal of the Patriot Act. Dennis Kucinich so far is the only one who has, but there are other signs that some candidates' campaigns are being infiltrated. So this is a very deep political swamp, but it's going to be a Donnybrook.
What's a Donnybrook?
Donnybrook's one of those barroom fights where the chairs are flying and people are coming out of the windows and, you know, where 50 guys are fighting and smashing everything in sight. That's a Donnybrook.
I see. Well, I see. I don't know what it means. Anyway, that was going to be my next question, Mike Rupert. What about 9/11? Because people just seem to go just up till now, even those who question anything, stop right when they get to the door of the room of 9/11, who did 9/11, basically. And maybe you'd like to say something about that since you have a lot to say.
Yeah, 9/11 is far from over with, and 9/11 is coming back, and it's going to come back with a vengeance. Recently, there's been some controversy about a story by BBC journalist Greg Palast, who wrote a long story about Congresswoman Cynthia McKinney, telling the whole world what she didn't say about 9/11. But I spoke to Cynthia yesterday, and I will be speaking for her tonight when I speak at the screening of Aftermath. And basically, Greg Palast got it wrong, period. She did raise serious questions about foreknowledge and 9/11, and it's in the transcript of an interview that she did with Dennis Bernstein at KPFA. And I know that because I'm the one who gave her the information on the foreknowledge, which she then checked.
Right, and she was on your Truth and Lies of 9/11 film.
Yes, yes, indeed she was, and her position is very clear. That there were a number of warnings from foreign intelligence services, from the Germans, the French, the Russians, the Israelis, very specific, before the attacks of 9/11, that were given in some cases directly to the White House. That's the case of the Russian information, that when you look at it, said that airliners were going to be hijacked in the week of September the 9th and crashed into the World Trade Center. Very specific information, which the administration, and this is stuff that has since been classified by the president and CIA director George Tenet, who I'm sure will ultimately testify that that's what the president told him to do.
And that's what they do with everything. They just disappear information.
Well, but that's going to come back because, see, now in the current paradigm, we see the CIA distancing itself completely from the White House. The CIA created a paper trail on the forged Niger documents, separating itself, saying we knew they were forged. So, and Bush is trying to blame the CIA, and that's a replay of Watergate. Nixon was trying to hang Watergate on the CIA, and that's why it's doomed to fail. But vis-a-vis 9/11, insofar as that goes, Cynthia McKinney was very clear. This needs to be investigated, because what happened was is I provided her with the documentary evidence that these warnings had been given, basically from the mainstream news sources in Europe, and one other piece that I obtained through another source. And she said that she called her intelligence contacts in Congress and ran them out by her, and she said they never called back, and that means it's true. When they don't call back, that means it's right. Mm-hmm. Now, that was a conversation she and I had. But her point was, no, this needs to be looked at. She's not saying that the Bush administration has had foreknowledge and helped the attacks, but she's not saying that they didn't, but she's saying there's smoke here, and there's some, you know, there's duck tracks and duck feathers and duck manure, so there might be a duck here.
And what do you say, Mike Rupert?
It's a duck. It's absolutely a duck. I mean, when I first came out on 9/11, when I did the Truth and Lies video, and for about a year after that, my position was that the administration had complete foreknowledge of the attacks and allowed the attacks to happen. Now, what happened to change my opinion even more stridently afterwards was that I took 7 months off of speaking to write a book. And during the research for that, I have definitively concluded, and I can say that the evidence showing that is better, is good or better than the evidence showing that the administration cooked the intelligence to get deceive the American people for the war in Iraq. That the U.S. government not only let the attacks happen, but actively facilitated them. In other words, held the door open, kept some of the hijackers out of jail, prevented 5 separate FBI investigations, each one of which could have prevented the attacks. And that was all done by one supervisory special agent of the FBI who was promoted. And I'll be revealing more about that in my book. That's one of the big bombshells I'm dropping in the book. But the U.S. government not only knew about the attacks, but it actively made sure that they occurred.
Mm-hmm. And your book, Crossing the Rubicon, when is it coming out, Mike?
We don't know yet. We had a little conflict with our first publisher this summer. I'd finished the book. It was supposed to be turned in February. We turned it in. And the publisher sent it off to a copy editor, but he wouldn't let me talk to the copy editor. Now, anybody who knows anything about writing books and authors knows that one of the strongest relationships is between the author and his editor. But I wasn't allowed to talk to it. And when the book came back 2.5 months later, 62% of the book had been cut, without any consultation with me whatsoever. Now, I had smelled something coming, so we were able to really put the publisher in a position where either you're going to let go of this contract now or you're going to be, I'm going to own your publishing house. So he let go of the contract. Now, we are in the process of renegotiating now. We hope to make an announcement within a month or so.
Well, you know, that's a good example of the kinds of things that happen to people that speak up. And, of course, Cynthia McKinney got thrown out of Congress, and we won't go. She'll be back, you say. And some people get killed, and you know, there's this whole operation. So it's not so easy to change things. I'm just going to play devil's advocate here.
Yeah, but sometimes you have to get up, no matter how many times you've hit. I mean, Cynthia and I, the congresswoman and I, were friends. We talk frequently. And the thing that I use and we use with each other to lift each other's spirits is the classic example of the fight between Muhammad Ali, and I think it was Joe Frazier, which was the Rommel in the Jungle, which was, I think it was Frazier, who was just punching Ali all over the place. And Howard Cosell, all the sports writers, were going, Ali can't stand it. But Ali was right in Frazier's face saying, is that the best you got? Is that the best you got? Can't you hit me any harder than that? And Cynthia and I both have that kind of an attitude. Now, she's in the middle of a very large lawsuit in Georgia because there was a very illegal crossover vote in her primary. And I expect within a couple of weeks you're going to be hearing a very positive announcement on her progress in that suit. So she is not down and out, and she might wind up back in Congress with all of her seniority intact, including the 2 years that she wasn't there. And she is far from going away.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's good to hear, and for sure inspiring to action. And it's really, really great to hear that things are opening up. I want to circle back a little bit to this thing about Greg Palast saying that Cynthia McKinney didn't really say that. Why would he do that?
Well, I don't know. I was kind of taken aback, as were many others. Many of us were applauding Greg Palast's early work post 9/11. He did some incredible work on WAMI, the World Assembly of Muslim Youth, where he produced a classified FBI report showing that the White House had intervened to prevent investigation of two of Osama bin Laden's relatives living near CIA headquarters. But then all of a sudden, like maybe it was 6 months ago, maybe it was a little bit more than that, Palast suddenly came out and said there's no way the Bush administration had foreknowledge. Anybody who says so is a conspiracy theorist. Well, this is part of a move which I sense which is being pushed on some through some aspects of the so-called left to co-opt the 9/11 issue and soften it so as to protect the political environment for just another gang. I mean, that would be tantamount to switching the Genoveses for the Gambinos, and the Gambinos will dress nicer, they'll have better music, but it's the same game. I don't know why Palast went there, because there's been more and more mounting evidence of government complicity in the attacks and certainly of foreknowledge. That case, as far as I'm concerned, is open and shut once somebody honestly looks at the evidence. Now, what's playing to our advantage is that we are seeing very strong signs that in this move to remove a recalcitrant and I would say mentally tweaked president who is going to fight tooth and nail to stay, that 9/11 is going to be coming out in much more detail. And I think we're going to see a great many facts about 9/11 put on the table. You got Bob Graham running around right now saying 9/11 cover-up, 9/11 cover-up. And I know a good deal of what he knows because I've written about the stuff that has since been classified out of the Intelligence Committee report. So 9/11's coming back.
He is saying that, huh? Yeah. And then we need these folks who were told not to fly planes to intercept the the so-called hijacked planes.
Right.
And were there any hijackers?
Well, I'm not going into the were there any hijacker question, but it's clear that in the one calendar year prior to 9/11, U.S. fighter jets were scrambled 56 times for an airliner that just went off course for a couple of minutes, and they were flying beside the airplane within a matter of minutes. And yet the whole system broke down systematically on 9/11. In my book, I'll have like a 6 or 7 foot flow chart that breaks it down, all footnoted. Everything in my book will be academically footnoted, that shows absolute interference with the normal operating procedures on 9/11.
Yeah, well, that's enough for me, and that was really seemed pretty clear cut, but it seems like it's not enough for a lot of people, so some of those people will need to speak out, maybe some of the people who got those orders, or do you think?
Well, not everybody knows. You see, that's what people who are novice with conspiracies don't understand. I mean, one of my most dogged and most inaccurate and really most unethical critics last year was saying, well, you would have had to have tens of thousands of people know, and my position all along has been, no, I've seen conspiracies. You only need a few people in key positions to know. That's why I've made the point of identifying one supervisory FBI agent who killed five separate investigations in Minneapolis, in Phoenix, in Chicago, in Denver, and in Washington, D.C. Five investigations, all killed by one supervisory agent. You don't need 10,000 people. You just need somebody to issue the orders in a way that aren't questioned. It's wrong to assume that every fighter pilot in the country would have known what was happening. Remember, the president's plane was flying around all over the place, and the fighter pilots could have been told the president's changing course again, stand by to defend Air Force One, so they wouldn't have asked why they weren't going after the hijacked airliner. You have to know how to do this. And I've identified key people in the State Department as well one person who was pivotal both in the Clinton and the Bush administration. And I do this throughout my breakdown of 9/11. It doesn't require 10,000 people, and not everybody would have to know.
Mm-hmm. Well, we just have a little bit of time left, but maybe I just want to say what you said, the word conspiracy theory, and there's just so many people, and we've talked about this before, who just... And some of them are on this this left, so-called left, that just will just fall all over themselves, anything but admit to that there could be, that there's some actual individuals that could have made an actual plan, which happens all the time. I mean, we do it with our friends. I just urge people to think, don't be manipulated.
Well, I think if people can just get past their very immature, shame-based reaction to the term conspiracy theorist, I mean, I can hear in the back of my head Joseph McCarthy from 1951 saying, "Are you now, or ever have you ever been a communist?" And people react to the word. Have you been a child molester? Have you been a Democrat, for God's sake? Have you been a progressive? You know, the fact is not this. Conspiracies do exist. I don't deal in conspiracy theory. I deal in conspiracy fact. Now, 9/11 is coming out on the table, whether the people who don't want to believe it or not, and it will not be co-opted. And there's leaks coming from the intelligence community all over the place, people like Cynthia McKinney, and you're going to be surprised to see a few other members of Congress who, when they start talking about 9/11, the bozos who don't want to go there are going to be really backpedaling like crazy when they have to deal with the fact that it is going to come out, and it will.
And how come they have, if they known and they just haven't talked up till now, or what's changed?
Well, I think what has changed is the fact that the administration has made an absolute shambles of American foreign policy. Our stature in the world has never been lower. In Latin America, with Otto Reich being his arrogant self running Latin American affairs, I don't think U.S. Latin Americans have been at a lower point in the last 40 or 50 years. We are in Vietnam like quagmires in Iraq and Afghanistan. It's going to get worse. Africa's going to blow up. I've been predicting that for a year, and now it's happening. We are witnessing the sequential war for oil, and this administration is, from the corporation standpoint, if you look at the skill set of George W. Bush, Dick Cheney, Donald Rumsfeld, Colin Powell, all these guys, their skill in the corporate world is mergers, acquisitions, and liquidation. They make money by acquiring companies, driving them into bankruptcy, or liquidating the stock. They don't know how to create or manage anything. And that's coming home now. They've botched it. They've botched it so bad that Wall Street is turning on them. The major financial powers are turning on them, and the military is turning on the Bush administration. Three candidates have been offered the job of Army Chief of Staff and have refused. They won't work for Rumsfeld, Cheney, and Bush. They're vacant now, a Chief of Naval Operations, I believe it is, too. The military and the intelligence community are in full revolt. That's why we're seeing all of these leaks coming out now, and you're going to see a lot more.
Right. Well, and you can read more about it on FromTheWilderness.com. Which is obviously on the internet, and people can subscribe if they don't have the internet also, can they not, Mike?
Oh, sure, absolutely. We have snail mail versions that come in your mailbox every month, and we have an electronic version. It's a little bit cheaper. We also have tons of free stories on there, too. I give away as much as I can and still try to pay the bills and pay the five or six writers I have working for me now.
Okay, so that's www.fromthewilderness.com. And look for Mike Rupert's book, Crossing the Rubicon. And thank you so much for your time and your busy, busy schedule, Mike Rupert.
Always a pleasure, Sue. Thank you very much.
My name's Sue Supriano. Thanks for listening. To order a copy of the program you just heard, write down the following information. The email is sue@suesupriano.com. That's Sue, S-U-E, at Sue Supriano, SUESUPRIANO.com. Or the telephone is 510-883-1979. That's 510-883-1979.